his left. Tough shot. Made it. End of the line.
Bad pass. Tipped away. And Indiana's got it. Up the floor to Oladipo. He will lay up. Score!
Jones. Watford for the win.
Yes! Yes!
It's Indiana. It's Indiana.
Welcome to Podcast on the Brink. I'm your host, Jared Morris. When you are a lifelong Indiana fan, Don Fisher's voice becomes as familiar as your own. And as someone who writes and podcasts about Indiana basketball now, I can't think of anything more exciting than getting to interview the voice of the Hoosiers. Wednesday afternoon, I got to do just that, and I'm really, really excited to bring you this interview. We discuss his general impressions of the bizarre past week for the Hoosiers, examples of past IU teams who have really struggled, similar to this year's bunch, and turned it around, the development of Yogi Ferrell and just how bright his future is, where Noah Vonleh ranks among the best freshmen he's ever seen at IU, and much more, including an update at the end of the podcast on the health of Royce Waltman. I don't think it's possible for you to enjoy listening to this as much as I enjoyed doing it, but I hope you come close. Here is my interview with the great Don Fisher. I am joined today by the voice of the Hoosiers Hall of Fame broadcaster, Don Fisher. Mr. Fisher, I feel like we need a quick reset because when we scheduled this interview on the afternoon of February 12th, Indiana sat in the middle of the pack at 4-6 with two seemingly winnable games coming up against Penn State and Purdue, and there was hope in the air that this team could make its move toward an NCAA tournament berth. Cut to today. Indiana collapsed against Penn State, had a player suspended after an OWI, got destroyed in West Lafayette, and yesterday had to cancel a nationally televised game because a panel from the ceiling fell at Assembly Hall. So first, let's take a deep breath and thank our lucky stars that the panel fell when it did and not 6 hours later, and then let's just get things started by getting your general impression of one of the worst and most surreal single weeks in the history of a basketball program that certainly is no stranger to bizarre moments.
No, you're right about the bizarre moments. There have been a lot of those through the years, and I've been at IU doing their games for 41 years now, so I've seen most of them.
Yeah.
That said, it was not a good week for Indiana basketball. It was the worst week of the season in regard to the Penn State Purdue losses because it brought about a three-game losing streak because they'd previously dropped a game at Minnesota on that previous Saturday. I guess the thing that really bothers everyone the most, including the team and the coaching staff, was the fact that they blew the Penn State game because they literally played well enough to win that game for the first 40 or 38 minutes. Unfortunately, the last 2 minutes resulted in four turnovers and baskets made by Penn State, almost every one of them, that basically took, you know, and gave the game right back to Penn State by a point. So that kind of falling apart or lack of composure or lack of mental toughness, maturity, whatever you want to call it, played into one of the more devastating losses of the season. And even Tom Crean on our Monday night talk show said that it probably played more of a role in the performance against Purdue than even he had imagined at that point. So without doubt, that game really, I think, took some air out of the sails of this Indiana basketball team and made them realize that, you know, maybe we've got to have a lot more maturity about us or composure, whatever you might want to call it, especially in the second half of games. And not that they hadn't suffered those maladies earlier, although not at that late stage of a contest, but the fact of the matter is this is a young basketball team going through the process, and I know that sounds like coach speak and somebody that's making excuses for him. I'm not, but I have been around for, as I said, 41 seasons of Indiana basketball, and I've seen this happen to teams coached by other coaches, with a lot of other players, with young teams. I've seen it happen with older teams on occasion. So it is not something that is unusual in the sense that it hasn't happened before. But the Purdue ball game, of course, comes about because the first half they played well enough, hung in there, did a lot of good things, and then the second half Purdue just had a terrific start of the second half run, and Indiana didn't match the intensity level, and the next thing you know it's a blowout because things can absolutely snowball on you when you're playing like that. And so this has been a tough week, there's no question about it. And then, of course, as you alluded to, the Iowa ball game being canceled last night, It is very fortunate that it didn't happen 6 hours later in the day, because someone, I think, would have been fatally injured. That thing coming down the way it did, and we've seen the film of it and the video of it for the last couple of days now, that would have killed somebody and probably injured two or three other people pretty severely. So the good news is it came down when nobody was in the stands, when nobody was essentially in Assembly Hall except for ESPN personnel who were setting up for the television broadcast. And I honestly am very elated that they didn't play the game last night, because I think a lot of people would have been quite wary of even coming to Assembly Hall if they'd have known something like that happened. The truth of the matter is, it was severe in the sense of what happened, but it's not a structural issue with the Assembly Hall, and that's what I think a lot of people were concerned about.
Yeah, you're right, and I think one of the issues with it is just that video. Seeing that video, I mean, it crystallizes what could have happened. What do you think the lingering effects, if any, will be, and how do you see that, you know, the panel falling impacting the plans for the renovation, or even the renovate versus replace debate that we've heard?
Well, I don't think it'll impact that aspect of it at all, because number one, these are facings that apparently are decorative, and they're all based on everything I've heard, they were going to be taken down today, and they do run from the edge of the four corners of the building all the way to the middle section there, and if anybody knows how Assembly Hall is built and has a common knowledge of how it looks, there are four different areas where these facades or these facings were up against the ceiling and the side walls. And all of those, based on what I was told yesterday, are coming down. They were simply to make it look better up in the corners of the building, which I'm not sure anybody ever looks at. But nevertheless, they were up there. And it wasn't a structural issue, because the roof does give. It's it has kind of a sponge effect, or when it has weight to it, it does give a little bit because of the way the building is constructed. And therefore, it's not something that would have happened because of a roof problem or anything like that. This simply came about because the weight on the roof and the snow and the water of the last few weeks had increased to the point, especially with the warm weather, making it even heavier, that it apparently got to a low point of where one of these facings was located, and it knocked it loose, and that's why it came down. And so they're taking the rest of them down so that this can't ever happen again. So it's not a structural issue in the sense of the roof being a problem or any of that, and it doesn't affect the bowl was never going to be touched anyway, with the exception of the south end zone area. So that was the only new reconstruction or the new construction or what they were doing to it to renovate it is not affected in any way, shape, or form.
You know, you mentioned the Purdue game, and I want to go back to that for a bit. There's a difference.
Do we have to, Jared?
I know. There's a difference between a team quitting and losing its fight, right? It's a fine line, but I think it's an important distinction. And Tom Crean even alluded to this in comments he's made, talking about the difference between your effort and your attitude toward it. In that second half on Saturday, did you see a team that had lost some of its fight, some of its attitude a little bit?
Oh, I don't think there was any question about it. I think it was pretty obvious to anybody that watched the game. I think they still, as Coach Crean said, played hard. But there's a difference in the attitude of playing hard and then playing with a competitive toughness, a spirit, so to speak. And there's no doubt that this team didn't have it. You could see it was snowballing on them as the game, as Purdue continued its onslaught. When you're getting beat like that down the floor in transition, there is definitely, I don't want to say give up, but there's definitely not any fight there. And the effort level, to me, had disintegrated to some degree. And without question, these guys knew that they were not going to win this game. They'd pretty much given that idea up, that they could still win. And when that happens, something's taken out of you, and you know that there's not a spirit there. If you've ever played athletics in almost anything, if you're getting pounded on, and it just continues to snowball on you, you can very easily quit, sit down, do whatever. But in a game like this, your effort level is critical. And how hard you're playing isn't going to matter if, you, in fact, you feel like you've been beaten. And I think Indiana was in that mode against Purdue.
You've mentioned that over your 40 years, you've pretty much seen everything. And you know, that you've seen young teams, even old teams, go through periods of basketball like this. Can you point to any examples, or does anything come to mind of a team that went through a week like this or is on a trajectory like this late in the season and is able to turn it around and finish with some positive momentum to head into the offseason with?
Well, I remember very vividly the 1985 season, the 84-85 season. Indiana had a team very similar to this, a very young basketball team that was, you know, they were struggling. They played very well in the early part of the season, and then they got on a run at the end of the year where they were very ordinary and just didn't have it going. I can't remember specifically the game or games that I remember back to them, but I had the same feeling back in that era. And I had the same kind of the same feeling in 1977 after Indiana had gone 32-0 the previous year. That 76-77 team had one veteran on it, Kent Benson. They had more than one, but they had one guy that was a starter from the previous season. And then they had a sophomore junior in Wayne Radford, who was another guy that had seen a lot of action the previous year as a guy coming off the bench. But they didn't have much else to go with it. Mike Woodson, I think, was a freshman on that team. And it was just a team that hadn't had a lot of playing time together. And that team ended up winning only 14 games. They were 14-13. Now, the record book shows them at 16-12. But two of those games were games that were forfeited by Minnesota, that Minnesota had pounded them pretty strongly in each of them. And that team struggled all year long. They just couldn't put it together. And so you had the same feeling in games that season that this team, they hadn't given up. But they were playing hard, but they didn't have a real spirit, a real belief, I guess, maybe is a better way to put it. They didn't have a belief that they were going to win or could win. And when you have that, you can tell it. And I thought that was the first time against Purdue that we'd seen it this year.
You know, the one guy who perhaps you could say looked like he was, you know, fighting till the end was Yogi. And we know that if this team is going to turn it around this year and rebound next season, that Yogi is going to be the key. He's just emerged so much as a leader in terms of controlling the basketball, scoring, and grown so much from last year. If he ends up being a four-year player here, what do you think his ceiling is?
Well, I it's hard to say what his ceiling is because he is terrific. I mean, in so many ways. And granted, he's still got things to learn, but he has improved his shooting ability dramatically this year. Now, he hasn't been super consistent with it, although he's gotten a lot better consistent-wise in the last several ball games or during Big Ten play than what he was in pre-conference action, in my opinion. Because he's leading the league in pure conference games in scoring right now, and he's become a terrific 3-point shooter. Which, you know, the year before he was just very average, not even quite average at that point. And you know, I watched him in high school as a sophomore in high school. He shot a lot, but he wasn't a great shooter. He was the only thing they had, so he was expected to score. But as he grew in his position as a junior and as a senior at Park Tudor. The kid became tremendous at finding guys open, making sure that he got the ball where it needed to be. His decision-making was excellent. That's the one area that I think he can make dramatic improvement in is his decision-making. Sometimes, and maybe it's because of this particular team, because it's so young and so much is put on his shoulders to do, but sometimes he almost tries to do too much on occasion. And those kind of things, when you're feeling that way, you tend to make poor decisions sometimes. And I think that's the one area that he's going to get much better at here in the next 2 years. And there's no doubt if he continues to work on his shot like he has, over the past season, this guy's going to be phenomenal by the time he's a senior.
And, you know, I mentioned the big leap that he's made and from 1 year to the next, and Victor is another guy who did that. It's an emerging trend with this program. And, it, you know, as we look for positive things to take from this year and into next, you know, even into next season, do you expect guys like Stan Robinson, Troy Williams, even Jeremy Hollowell, who's shown some signs of life recently, to make similar jumps next season?
Well, if we're going to be the kind of basketball team that, everybody wants to follow, yes, they've got to do that. And I can't say I expect it because I don't know their work ethic outside of watching them in practice. And believe me, when they practice at Indiana, they practice hard. And Coach Crane demands it. And if they don't, they won't play. It's pretty simple. And these guys all know that. So when they are on the practice court, they're working their tails off. Now, what they do in their off time, how much they work away from, practices that are mandatory and those kinds of things. That's the question mark that you have on players. And until they go through this, they're going through a season of adversity right now. How are they going to handle that adversity when the season's over with? Are they going to work their tail off? They're going to tuck their tail between their legs and say, man, that was harder than I thought it was going to be, and kind of lament it rather than understand that it's not going to get any easier. And the only way that they're going to get better is if they work on their own time and in the off season on things that they're weak at and the struggles that they have in those areas. So it's hard to anticipate or to make a prediction on that. I do think that a lot of these guys are gym rats. I know Stan Robinson is. Noah Vonleh is a gym rat. These guys are guys that can get better. And the question is, will they have the mental understanding of that to go about their business this summer to make themselves better? And hopefully they will, and I don't think there's any question that the conversations will be had from Coach Crean and the coaching staff with these guys at the end of the year of what they're supposed to and have to work on if they're going to become better players.
You mentioned Noah. He's the last individual that I want to get your perspective on. I can't remember another player whose coachability and work ethic has been lauded as much as Noah's. And, you know, we don't know if he'll be here next year. That's a topic for another day. But, you know, you've now seen him play for three-fourths of the season. In your experience, where does he stack up among the best freshmen who have played at Indiana?
That's a hard thing to say. I mean, Cody Zeller, I thought, made the greatest difference of any freshman I've ever seen in Indiana, and that's saying something now, because Isaiah Thomas as a freshman was a starter for Indiana back in 1980. But I think Cody made a bigger difference than any freshman I'd ever seen at Indiana with the team that he was on. They went from 12 wins the year before to 27 in his freshman season. Noah Vonleh's come into a team that won 29 games the year before, and this year they've won 14 at this point. And he has made an impact, there's no question. But he's made it with another group of freshmen or players that do not have the same kind of experience as we've seen last year. And that means that his ability to affect a ball game at this point I don't think it's been nearly what we would like to see, but it's not his fault. Again, it's the personnel that he's surrounded with and the inexperience and the youth of that personnel that has caused him to be less effective than what Cody was the year before. That said, I think Noah has the tools. I mean, he's got a great body. I think he's got a great basketball IQ. I've seen real positive improvement in a whole bunch of areas this year, not the least is his footwork inside, not the least of which is his post-defensive play. I think he's got great right-hand, left-hand abilities with both. He can shoot the ball with both hands close to the basket. He has gotten out onto the floor and knocked down three-point shots a lot better than he did in non-conference play and conference play. I mean, he's shooting 69 or someplace in the 65 to 70% range from three-point land, and he's not taking a ton of shots, but he's taking enough that he is a force out on the floor, and he brings the opposing post player out on the floor against him, or he's going to be able to knock down three. So he's made a lot of improvement this year as we've gone along. To put him in a category that he's one of the best freshmen ever, I think is definite. To say that he's the best or among the top two or three, I'd say that's a stretch simply because of the team that he's playing on.
And my final question for you about that team he's playing on, do you have any kind of gut feeling whatsoever of what kind of team we will see on Saturday in Evanston, especially after this long layoff?
Well, it's going to be interesting. I mean, it's been such an awful last week in the sense of outcomes. And then this week when you're anticipating to play against an Iowa team that's ranked 15th in the country, and you know it's a great ball club. But here's the thing about Iowa. They play the style of basketball that Indiana wants to play. They want to run up and down the floor. And Indiana wants to play that transition game as well. And I thought they had a great chance to knock off Iowa on Tuesday night. And now, of course, we're not going to know. So they've had to sit around and practice or lament or whatever your mindset is. But these guys work hard at their craft, and they work hard on the practice floor. And they'll get ready to play a good Northwestern team. There's no question in my mind. And they've got some payback in this scenario because Northwestern's already beaten them in the assembly hall. So that's got to be sticking in their minds as well. But the question is, in my humble opinion here, is whether or not this basketball team will respond in the sense of what they just went through this past week. And can they understand that that's about mental toughness as much as it is anything else? And you're going to have to go in there, and you're going to have to give an effort of which, you know, you've had at times this year, but you haven't been consistent with it. That's the biggest problem this team has had. Their consistent play has not been consistent. And if they're going to be a really good ball club down the stretch here and learn from their mistakes, consistency will be a key that is shown out there on the floor.
And before we close out today, Royce Waltman underwent surgery back in December. Do you have any update on his current health status?
Well, I do, and it's not necessarily positive. Royce, as everybody knows, went through, he had bladder cancer, diagnosed with it 10 years ago, has gone through a myriad of different issues through the years, had his bladder taken out a couple of years ago, and we thought that was the end of it, that everything would be fine. Well, that's not the case, and he's had a recurrence of some of the cancer issues that he's dealt with in the past. But the worst thing that has happened 3 weeks ago, or 3 weeks, 2.5 weeks ago, I guess I should say, Royce had a stroke. Mm. And at this juncture, he's doing okay. He's in rehab now. He was in the hospital for about a week, and with getting himself back into a position where they could put him in a rehab facility. And so now he's in rehab. He has some paralyzing of the left side. His speech is a little bit slurred right now. Obviously, he's had a really rough go, but he is in a great frame of mind. When I called him and talked to him about being in the rehab therapy, they told me, or his wife told me, he's in occupational therapy. And so he said, give me the phone. And so he gets on the phone and he says, Fish, he said, I'm in occupational therapy. Don't they know I retired? and so, you know, he's got that great mindset, that great dry wit. He's got a good mindset in this situation. But he has had a very rough time of it. And all I can say is keep him in your prayers on a continual basis, because Royce has had a really tough year, to say the least.
Yeah, it's good to know that he's in good spirits, and obviously all of Hoosier Nation is sending their best wishes to Royce. Well, you know, Mr. Fisher, as someone who grew up as a kid listening to you, this has been really kind of a dream come true to be able to talk to you today. And I just want you to know that I really appreciate the opportunity. Thank you very much.
Well, not a problem, Jared. Obviously, I wish you the best luck on your career, and hopefully somebody listens to this and they'll comment to you.
Yes, absolutely. With your name on it, I'm sure they will.
All right, man.
All right, thank you.
You bet, Jared.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye.
My thanks again to Don Fisher for taking the time to join me, and to Alex Bozich for setting it up. An absolute dream come true. Wow. Yeah, that was great. And thank you very much for listening. If you enjoy what you're hearing here on Podcast on the Brink, please consider giving us a rating, even a review on iTunes, or just share the link with a friend or two. We would really, really appreciate it. We will have another show for you next week. Until then, cheer hard for the boys this Saturday. Let's get this season back on the winning track. I know it's kind of hard to see it right now, but there is still time to salvage something positive from this season. So let's hope Coach Cree and the boys were able to do it. Let's help them out as much as we can. All right, everybody. Talk to you soon.